Welcome to On the Brighter Side. Before we start today, I want to quickly make you aware of two things. The first is that this Wednesday, March 11th at 2:30 Mountain Standard Time, sex therapist Cami Hurst and I will be doing an online live web class teaching you three secrets to unlock your desire. Now, it's going to be fantastic and you don't want to miss it. I promise it will be short and sweet and very educational. If you do happen to miss it, we will send you a replay. So make sure that you register to join us this Wednesday by going to www.onthebrightersideofmarriage.com/webclass. And secondly, this episode, while it shouldn't be too much for an adult, is about sex. And we do say that word quite a bit. So if you do have small ears around, you may want to pop in some headphones or wait until you are alone to listen. Now, I did edit this episode with my little ones coming in and out of the room, and it wasn't a problem, but now you have been warned. And without further ado, here is Good Girls Talk About Sex with my friend Leah Carey, host of the Good Girls Talk About Sex podcast. Hello and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm super, super, super excited about my guest today. We actually met and became acquainted through our mutual love of Olympic gymnast Shawn Johnson, and now we have found that we have very similar interests. So I'm very excited to introduce my guest today. Her name is Leah Carey, the host of the Good Girls Talk About Sex podcast. Hi, Leah. How are you doing?
I am so happy to be here, Monica. Thank you so much.
You bet. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your family?
Sure. So I'm a 45-year-old woman who, until fairly recently, based on the family that I grew up in, was really, really sexually repressed. I grew up in a non-practicing Jewish home, and there was a lot of confusion in my home about sexuality. My dad was an alcoholic, and he told me that I was fat and ugly and no one would ever love me, which is rough. That is not what you want to hear when you're already struggling with your own, like, who am I in the world at 11 and 12 and 13 years old? And then he also told me that he wanted to lock me in my room until I was 30 and break the kneecaps of any boy who looked at me. So it was really confusing. Like, am I totally undesirable or am I so desirable that I have to be protected from the world? And so what I did was just shut down any, I didn't date, nothing. I just shut it all down. I didn't have my first serious boyfriend or sex at all until I was 25. And it was all pretty miserable. So yeah, that's sort of where I came from.
Okay. Wow. So as the host of the Good Girls Talk About Sex podcast, you have a really unique and interesting life mission. Can you tell us kind of how you came to understand this mission?
Yeah. So I went through my healing adventure, and it really was an adventure, in my early 40s, and realized that I had always thought that I was somebody who was not allowed to think of myself as a sexual being, that I was only, you know, here to take care of other people's pleasure. That when it came to the bedroom, I was there to take care of a partner. My pleasure was completely secondary, if ever thought of at all. And so when I started going through this awakening that I was having, I was talking about it with my female friends. And it was, you know, at first it was uncomfortable. I was like, is this too much information? Like, really, tell me if you don't want to hear this much. And their responses were always, oh my God, tell us more. Please tell us everything. And in those conversations, they started telling me their stories about, you know, whether it was abuse and assault or whether it was about awakening and pleasure and joy, like the whole range of sexual experience, life experience. So, you know, I'm telling my story, they're telling their stories. And I begin to realize that we've all been yearning for a place to have these conversations, but we all think think that they're so taboo that we're afraid to bring them up. You know, we're afraid. We think that we're broken. So many of us think that we're broken, either because we don't have pleasure and so therefore we think we're broken, or because we have desires that aren't being met and we think we're perverted for having those desires. And so it's all just so taboo. We don't want to open the conversation because we're afraid that our friends will confirm for us that we are broken and perverted and all of the things. When in fact, what happens when we open the conversations is we have all of these common experiences, and it leads to so much, not just connection, but also laughter and, you know, crazy stories. And so that's where the idea for the podcast came, because I felt like I want there to be a place where we can all share these stories.
Well, I love that so much. And I also am hearing Brené Brown in my mind, where she says shame grows in secret. And yes, so it is great to have a place where this is discussed and we don't have to live in the shadows of, you know, what we've been taught to suppress. So
yeah. Brené Brown is one of my great heroes. So thank you.
Yes. You've been hosting your podcast for over a year and interviewing women from all walks of life, all over the world, really, about their sexuality and their kind of sexual awakenings, as you called it. In the time that you've been doing all of those interviews, what is the most interesting or unexpected thing that you've learned?
I love this question because it really has been a surprise to me. We have this cultural narrative that says that men want lots of sex and women don't. Mm-hmm. And so men are going to push for sex and women have to fend them off. You will hear that, whether it's embedded in soap operas and TV shows, or, you know, it's just, it's such a pervasive narrative. I have heard almost exactly the opposite. Not that men don't want to have sex. Obviously, that's not it. But what I hear is women saying, I actually want to have more sex, but the sex that I'm having isn't fulfilling my needs. It's not satisfying. And therefore, I don't want that sex. I want some other kind of undefined sex that I don't quite know or understand what it is, but I know that there's something I want. It just looks different than what I'm getting. And if I could have that, I would want a lot more of it. So it's a communication issue. It's like, to be really general about it, huge broad generalizations, it's like men are speaking one language and women are speaking another language, and everybody thinks that they're saying the same things, but they're actually using drastically different definitions for the same terms.
That's so interesting. So obviously you've gotten really comfortable discussing these topics that can be kind of touchy, taboo, polarizing. For my listeners who are uncomfortable with thinking about this and especially talking about their sexuality, what recommendations do you have to help them open up the conversation and get more comfortable talking about such an important part of themselves?
Yeah. So I think that it's a lack of familiarity. Because we don't hear it, we think that we shouldn't do it. And when we hear things more, they get more normalized, and therefore we feel more comfortable talking about them, which is exactly why I do the podcast that I do, because I want to normalize these conversations. So whether it's listening to my podcast or something else, what I would encourage people to do is to put yourself in situations where you're experiencing conversations about sex. It could be online, you know, there are plenty of, and you can find ones that fit your comfort level. You know, if you want something really explicit, you can find that easily. But you can also find things that are, you know, a little bit more beginner level, that are maybe PG-13 rated rather than R and NC-17 rated. So, but starting to allow yourself, this was what was so huge for me. I thought that I wasn't allowed to be a sexual being. I thought I wasn't allowed to be interested in it. Anytime that I picked up a smutty book, I shamed myself because I thought girls like me, I don't even know what I thought girls like me meant, but there was some definition I had in my head of girls like me aren't allowed to be interested in this. And it was by exposing myself to more and more conversations that I began to get more comfortable with thinking about it, hearing about it, talking about it. So I think that's the first step, is just putting yourself in those situations.
So for those of us who are raising children, it's very apparent that our kids are having these conversations at school, that they're eventually at some point going to have the opportunity to learn either from teachers or from mostly from peers, though, about their own sexuality. What kind of advice do you have for mothers to help kind of get themselves comfortable, but being able to discuss these topics with their kids so that they're getting the right information from the right sources?
Yeah, so this is a challenge because in our society, we have a lot of strictures around who can talk to kids about what subjects, who can talk about sex at all, let alone to kids. Like it's a really thorny landscape. And getting thornier by the day. So, and let me be upfront, I am not a child sex educator. That is an entire skill set that I think is really desperately important. But I tend to work with mothers. So my feeling is that the healthier a mother's relationship with her own sexuality is, the healthier messaging she is going to provide to her child simply through osmosis. You know, if mom and dad are having a lot of tension in the bedroom, you know, they're not having sex, or they're maybe having sex, but it's really fraught with a lot of baggage. That doesn't end when the morning light comes and the door opens and they're in the kitchen. That tension bleeds over into the rest of the day. And so, you know, maybe you're in the kitchen together and you're still upset because something happened last night. You had a blow up around sex, or one of you felt like you had been rejected. You go into the kitchen the next morning and you start sniping at each other, and the kids hear that. They don't necessarily know it's about sex, but they know that there's tension in the house. So if you can start to deal with those sexual issues in your own bedroom, not only does it create a happier house, but you also are modeling for your kids what healthy behavior looks like in relationship and in communication. And as far as I'm concerned, sex is only like 10% about the actual physical act. The other 90% is about the conscious, connected relationship and the communication between the two people.
I love that you just said that. I think that is so, so, so important. And like you, I'm kind of finding that my own life mission is to provide some education and awareness around a lot of this as well. So I want to spend the rest of our time kind of talking about this sort of shared mission that we have, but I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that most of my listeners are in a committed relationship of some sort. And I think it's so important to point out that consent is crucial, even within a marriage, even within, you know, a very committed relationship. Let's talk about consent versus coercion.
Yeah, this is so important because there is this, again, this cultural narrative that if you're in a relationship, you've consented. Like it is blanket and you're supposed to do whatever your partner wants. That is not what consent means. So I did not tell this story about how I had this experience in my early 40s when a man said to me, "What do you want? What do you really, really want?" And I had to stop and think about it because nobody had asked me in a way that made me realize that they actually wanted the answer. And what I said to him was, "I want you to touch me without expectation of reciprocation. I want you to touch me just so that I can experience feeling." And it was so scary to say that. I mean, it was so scary because I was, in my mind, risking total rejection because, again, the cultural narrative is not that. And his response to me, when I looked at him and I said, "Is that okay that I just asked for that?" And he looked at me and he said, "Honey, that's what consent means. It's not just not saying no. It's saying a full and enthusiastic yes. And that is necessary at every moment of every relationship. You don't just get married or get into a committed relationship and say, okay, now I'm yours to do with what you want. I am still a full, and I've been with my partner for almost 2 years. I am still a full and autonomous being who gets to say what is going to happen to my body, how and when. And it is his responsibility to listen to me, just like it's my responsibility to listen to him. This is not a one one-way street. But if what's going on in your bedroom is, you'll show me that you love me if, that's not consent. That's coercion. That is somebody using power dynamics over you to get what they want. That is not a healthy sexual relationship. And there are lots of other ways that that might look. But if you're just not saying no, regardless of the state of your relationship, that is not consent. And I think it's a really important distinction for us to learn how to draw for ourselves, because we were not taught any of this. No matter how good the sex ed we had was when we were kids, we were not taught about the distinction between not saying no and enthusiastic yes.
I absolutely agree. And to go even just a little bit deeper on this topic, I think that some of us were kind of conditioned or understand maybe that we're sort of obligated to perform in a certain way in the bedroom. And I think it's a really important discussion to have, that not feeling comfortable saying no or delaying a sexual experience in that context. If you're not able to say no, then you're never really saying yes.
Absolutely. If you don't know what yes feels like in your body, how are you going to know when you want to say yes and when you want to say no? I mean, I spent the first 20-ish years of my sexual life just doing whatever anybody wanted. Every once in a while, I would say no, but it came with a lot of grief and a lot of guilt, all of which is coercive behavior. And so I just learned to kind of go along to get along. I had no idea what a real yes sounded like because I was so busy trying to navigate my own, how do I not say no and still feel like an okay person? Like, you know, that I had no idea what it felt like to say yes. And I think that that's true for so many women. You know, we are brought up, again, broad generalization, but as little girls, so many of us are brought up to put on a dress and look pretty and not get dirty, to take care of the dishes, to, you know, basically to be pleasing to the people around us, to take care of the needs of everyone else first, and to leave our own needs till the end, if at all. That is not a teaching that is really going to allow us to learn how to say, here's what I want and here's what I need in order to feel fulfilled. So this is a whole new skill set. And what I really want people to hear is it takes practice. First of all, it takes courage to do it the first time. And then it takes practice. Just because you do it the first time doesn't mean you've got it. Like, you are going to have some forward steps and some backward steps, and that's okay. That's the process of learning.
I love it. So what is your advice for women at any age that are learning about their own bodies and how they feel pleasure?
So I know that masturbation can be a really sticky subject for a lot of people, but I want to say that if you don't know how to bring pleasure to your own body, it is very hard to help someone else understand how to give pleasure to your body. So in whatever way that works for you, and it doesn't necessarily have to be masturbation. If that really squicks you out, you're not broken. That's okay. Maybe you want to read some, you know, go online and read some sexy stories and see what sort of turns you on so that you can share those with your partner. Pay attention to your fantasies so that you can share with your partner. And I know, again, we're talking about really, really comfort zone blasting things. So you don't have to do this all today. You know, you can spend a few months thinking about your fantasies and really paying attention to the things that get you excited. And maybe 6 months from now, you're going to build up your courage to have the conversation. Like, it's okay to take it slow, but really starting to pay attention to what works for you. What, when you watch TV or movies, what are the scenes that turn you on, get you excited? And when you notice that happening in your body, then get even more, like, pay even closer attention. So what is it about this scene that's turning me on? Is it the words that are being used? Is it the way that they're being touched? Is the way that they're looking at each other? Is it the cowboy boots that he's wearing? You know, like, it could be anything, but just start paying attention. And I think that's the best way to get started.
Awesome. I love that advice. In your experience, what is the most important advice you could give to newly married women related to navigating sex and intimacy with a new spouse?
So it's going to change. every day. Just because something worked yesterday doesn't mean that it's going to work tomorrow. So having a sense of adventure and of building a sense together that this is something we're exploring and that we're going to learn about together is the best thing that I think you can do for your relationship. And the earlier in your relationship you institute that, the easier it's going to be to continue it through the relationship. So yeah, really thinking about how do we enter this space together? Are there times that we can have conversations? Like maybe you set up a conversation that you have once a month that you're like, this is really working for me. And I was wondering if maybe we could try this thing. Or, you know, just finding ways to acknowledge the fact that this is going to be constantly changing based on your mood, based on how the kids are sleeping, based on, you know, on your monthly cycle. It's going to be constantly changing. And that's not only okay, it's normal.
I love that. And you bring up an interesting point. As a mom of four, I've experienced firsthand all the changes brought about by hormones and desire and all the things that come with conception, pregnancy, postpartum, several times over. Some of the particular challenges that moms face after having children.
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I hear from moms of young kids is the issue of, I have a low libido. What's wrong with me? Why hasn't my libido returned after giving birth? And what I really want women to hear is that the issue is probably not your libido. The issue is that you and your partner, prior to having kids, your partner was used to being the sort of sole recipient of your attention and your energy. And there was a whole sort of dynamic around your relationship that was just the two of you. And then this new small person arrives who takes 100%, like literally lived in your body for, you know, if you gave birth yourself, and who is now probably using your body as a feeding station and a jungle gym. Like, you have a huge amount of energy going out to this little person that used to be going to your partner. And so now you're depleted because you are using all of your energy to this small person. Meanwhile, your partner is like, hey, what about me? I'm used to getting X amount of attention from you, and now I don't get it, and I feel hurt. So here's the issue. The issue is not that you have a low libido. Well, okay, I don't want to make that such a blanket statement because everyone is different. But for the majority of people who I have spoken with, the issue has never been about their libido because they do actually want to have touch and connection with their partner. The issue is that they don't want to be responsible for being the source of pleasure for their partner because they no longer have the energy for it. Their body is touched out by the children or the child. So what we need to do is adjust the conversation around what sex looks like, what sexual contact looks like when there are young kids in the house, and understand that you need to have your tank filled up rather than all of your energy going out to yet another person who wants things from you. You need to be receiving attention. You need to be receiving touch. And I understand that sometimes a man's going to hear that and be like, hey, wait a minute, that's not how we do things. But in my experience, if we lead them through the process and really help them to understand what this is about, they desire and crave that connection just as much as we do. They just need help understanding how that works for us so that our tank gets filled rather than further depleted.
I love that. For those of us who have been married or partnered for a very long time, what are your best tips for jumpstarting a stale sexual relationship?
Yeah. So first of all, don't try to do it all at once. You know, it's like the kids go off to college or whatever it is, and you're like, we can finally do it. And I'm going to make this huge 4-course dinner, and there's going to be candles, and there's going to be moonlight, and I'm going to make a bubble bath, and it's going to jump. No. don't do that. I mean, if that's been part of your process before now, okay. But if you're, don't try to go from 0 to 60 in one night, because both of you are probably going to end up feeling even more awkward than before because you're so out of practice. So start small, start slow. If you have gotten to the place where you don't really touch each other that much, start practicing touching your partner when you're both in the kitchen together and you pass by them, like put your hand on their lower back for a moment as you pass by, just like that sort of gentle, casual touch begins to build intimacy. And then over time, you can start to bring that back into the bedroom. If you are touching and that's not the issue, you're just sort of not really, you're out of practice with sexual touch, I have something that I can offer to your listeners as a download, which is the 3-minute game. And this is one of my favorite things that I use with my clients and it's at leahcarey.com/3-minute game, where you actually practice touching your partner for very short periods of time in very defined ways. So you lay down and your partner says, "How would you like me to touch you for 3 minutes?" And, you know, it might actually take you a minute to figure that out if you're out of practice, but, you know, you sort of get quiet with yourself and say, "I would really like it if you would just gently stroke my back for 3 minutes." It does not need to be sexual touch. You can even do it with your clothes on if you want. And all they do for 3 minutes is just stroke your back. And then the alarm goes off and you switch places and you say to your partner, "How would you like me to touch you for 3 minutes?" And you do exactly the same thing in reverse. It's a way to begin in small, defined doses with no pressure, because it takes away all of the pressure of you being like, "I don't know if they like what I'm doing," you know, like trying to get fancy. Don't get fancy, just do what they ask for. And it begins to build up your touch intimacy again.
So good. So good. Okay. I hope you're ready for my signature question. If you had the undivided attention of everyone in the world for just a few minutes, what is the most important thing you could teach them about discovering and feeling comfortable with their own sexuality?
You are not broken, period. If you want different sex than you're getting, you are not broken. If you want more sex than you're getting, you are not perverted. If you want less sex than you're getting, you are not broken. No matter what you want, as long as it doesn't involve hurting someone without their consent, no matter what you want, it's okay. You are not broken. And there's so many messages in our culture about how we as women are sexually broken. It is not true, period.
Leah, that's so good. I am so happy that we had this conversation today. I'm grateful for you and your mission and how comfortable you have become. Just speaking about all of these topics that I think lots of people blush about.
Yes. You've done very well, by the way.
Thank you. So where can my listeners find you and learn more about this mission that you have?
Yes. So the podcast is Good Girls Talk About Sex. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at Good Girls Talk. And my website is leahcarey.com.
Perfect. Thank you so, so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hooray and congratulations. You made it to the end. That wasn't so bad, was it? You might have some flushed cheeks, but I thought that Leah did such an amazing job tackling some tricky topics and making the information manageable and educational. As you may have learned by now, I do love discussing this topic, and I feel a very strong call to empower women to have more love, deeper connection, increased fulfillment and pleasure, and complete intimacy with their partners. These are the types of conversations I am so excited to continue to have, not only with experts in the field, but with anyone who is willing to make a commitment to being true to themselves and their sexuality in their relationships. I want to remind you of the web class that sex therapist Cami Hurst and I are doing this Wednesday, March 11th at 2:30 Mountain Standard Time. It would be great if you could join us live, because there will be a Q&A, but if you cannot make it, we will send you the replay if you register by going to www.onthebrighterSideOfMarriage.com. /webclass. I am so excited to see you guys then. And next week, we will have Alicia Carlson come on and talk about emotional maturity, which is such an important and fantastic topic, especially in terms of marriage. So until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.